This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious and oh-so-wonderful friends. You are looking fantastic. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Solve It, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, astronauts, and other experts as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, cooperation, creativity, and critical thinking. Right now, please welcome to the show my co-host, my partner in exploration, the Admiral of Adventure, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Ned.
How are you?
I'm great, and I'm so excited about the podcast today.
Ooh.
So let's just not even talk. Let's just spin the wheel and get going.
What do you do if you lose your dolphin?
What do you do when you lose your dolphin? How do you lose a dolphin?
This is such a cool podcast. Today, we are going to be talking with Dr. Justine Jackson Ricketts, who studies dolphins. And this was one of the things that they had to do, was find a pod of dolphins and discover where it was swimming around and where it was going to.
Well, I am so excited about this. Let's welcome Dr. Justine. Welcome to Solve It for Kids.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So for those of you that don't know or haven't read the book, which you should go out and get, hopefully, Justine was my expert, National Geographic Explorer expert for my Absolute Expert Dolphins book. So we teamed up, what, 3 years ago? I'm thinking 2-3 years
ago. It was a while ago. It could have been before, yeah.
And we wrote this book together. I sent her lots of questions and she gave me some really awesome insights into the Irrawaddy dolphins. So why don't you start out and tell our listeners, what did you study? Like, what are the Irrawaddy dolphins?
So they're, a species of dolphin that they're relatively rare. And they're found mostly in Asia. I studied them in Southeast Asia in Thailand, and they're a little bit different from what you would normally see. Most people think of a bottlenose dolphin or a common dolphin. But Irrawaddy dolphins have really short snouts. So instead of the long nose like you see on a bottlenose dolphin, they're much shorter. And actually their closely related species found in Australia is called the snubfin dolphin, because they also have pretty short fins. So they're smaller, and they have really short snouts, and that's the best way to tell them apart.
And what are they, gray? I'm trying to remember, what color are they?
Yeah, they're gray.
They're gray. Okay, so yeah. They would look like the color's the same. It's just the snout that's different. Interesting.
Yeah.
So the problem that Justine is going to solve today is, what do you do when you misplace your dolphins?
Wait.
Now, a dolphin is a pretty big thing. And you said plural, so we're talking dolphins. How do you misplace dolphins?
Well, it all comes about by trying to expand, trying to do more than you had originally planned. So we had a group of dolphins that we had been studying for several years, and they were pretty close to the coast, pretty close to shore. And so we thought, well, let's go out to these farther offshore areas around some islands and see what the dolphins are over there, see if they're the same group, see if we can recognize any of the same animals. And so we moved offshore and we went around three different islands and we didn't find a single dolphin. There were just none. We took to counting butterflies because we were so...
Which is a completely different animal, of course.
Yes, yes. And we couldn't record that because it was not part of our study.
Okay, so let's back up a little. So when you are doing a research trip, like, what is involved in getting all that together? This is a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah. So we had a pretty big team of researchers from all over, and we each person was doing a different thing. And so we hired a boat and people to drive the boat. And we had all this equipment that we loaded up onto the boat. And so what we would do is we'd go out every day, every morning, and we'd run what are called transect lines. And that's just a line in the water that you can't see. It's just, but you follow a certain path in the water at a certain speed. And you spend the time on that while you're on that path looking to either side to see if you see dolphins. We also stop and take environmental readings. That was my part of the research, was trying to figure out what type of environment these animals live in. These environmental readings every half hour as we're going along this path. And so other people were counting dolphins or taking pictures of dolphins to try to recognize different individuals.
Now, when you start a research project like that, is there something specific that you're trying to find out, or are you just going out there to see whatever you can learn?
Generally, there's a goal, we had a few different goals. One was the figuring out their habitat, figuring out where they live, which is what I was doing. And another part is recognizing a group. So saying, you know, this animal is part of this group. And they're associated with these other animals. So a big part of that is trying to figure out the population. So they're a threatened species, and in a lot of places they're endangered or critically endangered. And so what we need to figure out is how many are there in these certain places that haven't been studied yet. So the group in Thailand had not been studied before we went. And so what we were trying to do is figure out how many were there. Where were they living? I also worked on a diet study. So what do they eat? And does that overlap with what fishermen are going out and catching?
Oh, yeah, because if the fishermen are catching their food, then, of course, that's going to affect the dolphin population, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a lot of competition.
So what other environmental conditions did you look for? Are you looking for, like, water temperature, you know, salt, salinity kind of stuff? Or?
Yeah. So temperature, salinity, depth. A metric called turbidity, which is basically how clear the water is. And then we tried to look at current speed, but that didn't work out super well. But we also look for things like chlorophyll A, which can tell you how productive the water is. So how many plants there are, which then translates into how many animals you might be able to find. Higher chlorophyll A means higher productivity.
Okay. So, and this tells you where you would find them, or just the type of environment that dolphins like best?
The type of environment that they like best. So specifically for the Irrawaddy dolphins, these may not be the same factors that other dolphins live in, but we were looking at specifically when we find Irrawaddy dolphins, what habitat are they in? What are the conditions there? And if we can put those things together and find a pattern, then we know that they like this certain type of environment, or they survive better in this certain type of environment.
And can you give that information back to, like, local governments so they to make these areas protected or something?
Yeah, that's the goal. The goal is, you know, because they're not doing super well, that if we can give the people who are trying to save them this information, or trying to protect them this information, then they can use it to develop protected areas. And in Thailand and other places around there, there are definitely government organizations that are working to try to protect these animals.
What's the biggest risk to the dolphins? Why are they so endangered?
The biggest risk is being accidentally caught in fishing gear.
How did you end up doing this? So what did you study in college and all this kind of stuff? Kind of like what led you to do this? Have you always wanted to be an environmentalist here? Or?
Well, yeah. I mean, I always, from the time I was probably 5, I wanted to be a marine biologist specifically. So I did all the stuff you're supposed to do. When I went to college, I enrolled in a lot of biology classes, chemistry, math, all the things that you need. And I also did internships. So I did an internship after my freshman year of college, where I actually worked with a woman who was studying dolphins in the Florida Keys. And that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the field work. And then I also spent some time where I went to college at Duke. They have a marine lab. And so I spent a semester and a summer at the Duke Marine Lab So that was more focused on marine science rather than just general science. And that was where I really did well. So I kind of felt like, you know, I'm on the right track. And then I went to grad school, and that's where I did this project. And so I actually got involved in this project a little bit. It was kind of on accident. I had a different project that I was working on, and I wasn't super excited about it. And my advisor knew that. And he knew that I wanted to do something that had to do with conservation. And he knew a woman who was working in Thailand on conservation of Irrawaddy dolphins. And so he set up a meeting for the two of us to talk about this. And she said, so how would you like to go to Thailand in January? And this was December.
Oh, wow.
So I said, all right, let's go. That's how I got involved in this project.
That seems really cool. Kind of scary for you to just pick up and go to the other side of the world?
Absolutely. I had done some traveling by myself, but nothing so far. I mean, I'd never been that far, even with somebody else. Hop on a plane by myself and go to a foreign country, it was pretty scary, but it was also exciting. And I knew that I was going to be meeting up with other scientists and we'd be going to do this research project. So I knew I wouldn't be alone the whole time.
What was it anything that really surprised you that you discovered doing the research?
I guess the biggest surprise, I think probably for anybody researching animals, is that you don't necessarily find the things that you expect. So we go out and we do all of these studies and we collect all of this data and we think, okay, these certain variables are going to be super important. And then you run the models and it turns out that maybe two of the variables that you collected actually have any correlation with the animals.
So do dolphins hang out in group like dolphin gangs that they're always with the same dolphins, or is it a family kind of thing?
Different dolphins are going to be different, but our dolphins, we often saw them in smaller groups. Now, sometimes we'd see really large groups, but that was much more rare. They tended to travel in smaller groups, probably family groups, but we weren't able to do genetic testing, so we don't know if they're really family members or not.
And did you find that they were closer to the river mouth or the coastlines? Or
it did not come out as being important.
So huh.
It was, and that's also really strange because when we went offshore, we didn't see them as much. And there aren't really rivers on these islands. So you weren't finding closeness with river mouths. And there were some that were closer to the coastline, some points that were closer to the coastline when we were out, you know, in the offshore areas. But we expected, given that we didn't see them out there, that river mouths would come out to be very important because all of the places that we saw them were closer to river mouths than anything where we didn't see them, but it didn't shake out.
See, and that's how science works sometimes, right? Like you have this whole big research project or this idea and you come up with this hypothesis for we think this is what's going to happen. And then sometimes you don't prove that. But you still learn, right? You still learn stuff from it, even though you didn't prove what you thought you were going to prove.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, negative results are just as important.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was going to ask you. When you go out and you have this hypothesis that you worked really, really hard on, and it's really hard for me to say that word, but when you have this and then you go out into the field and you discover it, I was wrong. Does that get discouraging for you, or is it like, I got that wrong, but now I know a lot more than I did before I started?
Yeah, it was not disappointing. It's exciting almost to find out that, you know, you didn't understand as much as you thought you did, and there's so much left that you can learn.
So do you maybe get questions from the new data that you've gotten? So, you know, even you come up with a different solution than what you think or different answer, and then that might lead to more questions that you come up with.
Well, for sure. I mean, especially in terms of what we thought we were going to find, you know, the dolphins being offshore and also being in these closer areas, we want to know why they're not there. what actually is different about that area. You know, is it the depth and the temperature? Or is there some other factor that we didn't collect that might actually explain their absence?
What's the coolest thing about dolphins, in your opinion?
I mean, they're very intelligent, which is very cool. Gosh, I find them interesting to look at, and that there are so many different kinds, and that you wouldn't necessarily think that something like an Irrawaddy dolphin was so closely related to other dolphins. And I also find it super interesting that, you know, dolphins are whales, which is really cool in itself, but that the orca is a dolphin. So it's called a whale, and it's, you know, they're all whales, but within the subset of whales that are dolphins, a killer whale is actually a dolphin.
That's really fascinating. How many different types of dolphins are there?
Ooh, that's an excellent question that I cannot remember the answer to.
I would have to look that one up too. There are a lot. There are definitely a lot. I'm curious, did you guys interact with them? I mean, I know as researchers, you're trying to observe and not interact, but did any of them come close to the boat or anything?
They did not approach the boat. When they're in really big groups, they tend to be kind of distracted by each other. So we were able to get closer to them in those times. And that's when you get the best pictures, but they never approached. And if they were in a small group, especially, if you got too close, they would just swim away. They're not interested in us.
What's next for you? Are you still studying dolphins?
So I'm not. I finished my PhD. And as much as I enjoyed the field work, I was not as enthused about the rest of being in the academic setting. And so I've actually backed up, and I write and review a lot of educational materials now. So things like for anywhere from middle school through high school, and even some college level science questions and science tests. And I review some textbook material, things like that.
That's awesome.
I'm wondering, so you're a doctor. So mm-hmm. You went to school for like a wicked long time in Boston. And you had this dream, and then you did it, and then you said, I don't like it anymore. That's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it's not something that you want to do, then you shouldn't force yourself to do it because you always said you would. Yeah. It can feel like you can lock yourself into something like that, but you don't have to.
Now, a lot of people might say, oh, you wasted all that time. But I bet there's a lot of stuff that you learned getting your PhD that you're still using in your new job.
Oh, absolutely. You know, especially when I write about ecology or I write about evolution, those are things that I studied heavily while I was getting my PhD. And so I already have a deeper understanding of those things, which makes writing about them and reviewing the information a lot easier.
So I guess it's fun to know that if you're 9 or 10 or 12 years old and you don't know what you want to do when you grow up, it's okay because there's a lot of grown-ups who still haven't figured it out and are exploring nowadays.
Absolutely.
All right, so Dr. Justine, we love to challenge our listeners out there. This show is totally interactive. So I was wondering, is there something that you can challenge kids to do in their home that can help make the world a better place?
Absolutely. You know, conservation is so important, and it's why I ended up doing the project that I did. And I think that what we can all do is just be more aware of the world around us and what things are happening that may not be so good that conservation could help with. So I think it would be great to just go outside and take a picture of something in your area, something where you live that could be better, and talk about what you would change about that to make the situation better, the situation that you see that needs improvement.
Awesome. This is really cool because I imagine some kids are out there thinking, I'm like 10, I'm 11, I'm not, I, I can't change anything. But listen, listen, when my son was in kindergarten, one of his friends didn't like the fact that geese were getting hit by cars in this one particular area. And he wrote to the mayor here in Boston, and they put up a big goose crossing sign, and the goose stopped getting hit by cars. So, like, everybody can make a change.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's exactly. So that's what we're asking. So all you kids out there, that's what your challenge is. Go see anything around you outside that maybe needs to be fixed. One thing I would fix, because I live in Florida, is I would put less fertilizer on people's lawns, which I don't know that the homeowners associations will agree with us. But personally, I don't like all this, you know, runoff of all this fertilizer that we use to make our lawns. Let's have little patches maybe in the back that don't have fertilizer on it, and that's okay. But take a picture and send it to us. You can tag us at Solve It Podcast for Kids on Twitter or Instagram. Find us there. And we will make sure that Dr. Justine sees some of these pictures too. Maybe she, if she has time, she'll comment on them.
Dr. Justine, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer, as always, that was amazing.
I know. How cool. Wouldn't you like to go around in a boat and just search for dolphins all day and watch them swim around? I think that would be cool.
That would be a really, really... Imagine that. Your job could be going out and interacting with dolphins and being with them all the time, and most importantly, help them survive.
Exactly. In the ecosystems, and then help the local government take better care of them. I mean, this was just really cool. So everyone that's listening, if you want to learn more about Dr. Justine, please go to our website, solveforkids.com, and you can read all about her background. You can see some cool pictures of her interacting with the dolphins. And you can also see all the rest of our Solve It for Kids episodes, which we have tons of ones about the ocean, because I think you and I like the ocean a lot, don't we, Jay?
Absolutely. On top of the ocean, under the ocean, everything about the ocean. It's so cool.
It is so cool. And if you want to use our Solve It for Kids podcast in your classroom, be sure to check us out on Teacher Pay Teachers at Solve It for Kids, because we have three now episodes that you can use in your classroom with your kids.
This is really great. So the best place to go is solveitforkids.com, right?
Absolutely. Check us out there.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see you all next week for another exciting episode of
Solve It for Kids.